This tale has to do with the quote kidnapping unquote of a U.S. Navy sailor from the British hospital at Gibraltar at the entrance to the Mediterranean. The time is late 43, possibly early 44. We were then, at that time, we were stationed in Morocco, what was then French Morocco, at Port Leoti. The name has since been changed to Kenitra after the French were evicted by the Algerians or the Moroccans. At that time, I was the executive officer of the squadron, and we were newly trained in B-24s and operating the same. The story has to do with the pilot error. Upon arrival in Morocco, we had been briefed very sternly that there was a radio bay beacon at Madrid. Now, Spain was supposed to have been neutral. There ain't no such thing as neutral. Spain was supposed to be neutral, but yet they allowed the Axis to install a beacon there with exactly the same frequency and call letters as the tower frequency in Morocco. Now, when you're some five, and now these two stations, the shortest distance between them on land, or whatever way it was over land, is something in the order of 500 miles. But they have very strong signals. We are briefed about that. What is significant is Spain being neutral. If you land in a neutral country, or you have a ship and you go into a neutral port, by the Geneva Convention, you got to get a fix made and get out of there in 24 hours. Either that or you're there for the duration. Well, one of our planes was off on a patrol. Usually our patrols extended out to 500-700 miles to pick up a convoy and give them protection against submarines. This pilot was coming home now from a mission which was up in the Bay of Biscay, up in the corner of Spain. Incidentally, at the same time that they had this freak station, freak beacon in Spain, they also had another beacon up on that corner of Spain, which was coded. It was not for our use, it was for the use of submarines. Now, if you're at one corner of a square and project a number of radians out to sea, if you know which radian you're on, that tells you that that's where the station is, the angle of that radian. Now, we had that code later on, but this has nothing to do with this time. But anyhow, he was up in the Bay of Biscay on a mission, which was quite a trip up, and he was coming back down, and he tuned in on Madrid. If he had been paying attention to his navigation, he would have to know this signal was not for him. The automatic pilot with automatic direction finding, we used to call it the bird dog. That was the nickname for the automatic direction finder. And a lot of guys would tune on their radio to the station, and the bird dog would point to whatever direction that station was on that frequency. He flew. He headed for Madrid. Came down through the top of Spain, headed for Madrid. Whereas his home base was hundreds of miles farther south. By the time he found his mistake and tried to correct it, he was out of gas. Off the coast of Portugal, there's a lot of fishing done. What's that small fish? You get in the can.
Sardine.
Sardine. A lot of sardine fishing. The natives earn a living. They're fine nets and so forth. And at night, they were these two old men, not old at that time, but these two men were fishing for sardines. And they heard this plane crash. What happened, he'd run out of gas and he had to ditch. Well, when you ditch at night over water or anything else, and without any guidance for altitude, you're going to crack up, either spin in or dive in. The plane cracked up. Fishermen went over there, they heard this in the dark. They found the plane and the men swimming in the water, a crew of nine. And so they rescued them. And they took them into Portugal. They were off of Portugal, they took them into Portugal. And one man was severely injured. His ankle had been crushed. They kept there in Portugal for a few days and then took him south to Gibraltar and turned him over to the British, which was the proper thing to do. The British hospital at Gibraltar was just like an old World War II barracks. It was filthy, it was dirty, it was a frame building. They didn't really have a sanitary facilities as you'd expect in a hospital. If they wanted to sterilize something, they boiled some water and put it in there. Now, on our missions from Morocco to the Bay of Biscay, we, depending on the mission itself, the length, we frequently stop at Gibraltar and top off our fuel. Or maybe on the way back they'd top off, depending on the situation. At that time, as I said, I was executive officer of the squadron, but shortly thereafter I took command. And the plane crews that were coming back used to stop in and say to me about the injured man, his name was Schultz. They'd say, Captain, we saw Schultz, but he looks pretty bad. And this kept growing in intensity. You couldn't ignore it any longer. It was no more a tale of having visited. Now it was one of expediency about Schultz's health. So I got a hold of the flight surgeon for the wing. The wing is the group above the squadron. I got a hold of the flight surgeon and said, Andy, we got to go and see Schultz. From what the boys tell me, we better find out what's going on. So we flew up to Gibraltar, a couple of hundred miles north, and went to the hospital. Sad thing, as far as appearance and cleanliness. And we visited Schultz, and this is during the daytime. By noon, we had seen Schultz. The doctor had made his decision that Schultz should be moved because infection had set in. So we went to the commanding. So I said, Andy, what are we going to do? Dr. Anderson, Andy, what are we going to do? He said, look, we got to get this kid out of here. He's got a bad infection. It's not getting any better. In fact, the reason that infection is this environment here. So I said, okay, if it's your decision to move him, let's get him out. It'll be my decision to move him out. So we went to the commanding officer of the hospital. We sat down with him quite a while, went into all the detail. Finally, said, I can't do it. You'll have to get the permission of the commander of the base. The base is at the foot of that big rock you see on Prudential advertising. Yeah. Yeah, a monkey's up on that rock, you know. Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a monkey colony way up there, yeah. So when he went to see the commander of the base, he says, oh, I can't do that. It's not my authority. It's the, that's up to the commander of the hospital. So we're yo-yoing. Now, this takes time. By the time we got through, it's about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, we've made no progress. So the flight surgeon and I analyzed the situation, and it had only one answer, that we had to get Schultz out of there as fast as possible. So we went back to the hospital. By this time, both commanding officers had gone for the day. Now, to the British, the war was no big thing. They didn't get excited about it. They'd have their tea at 10 o'clock and the tea at 2:30. And if you call their attention to it, they'd say, slow down, old chap. We've been living this for 4 years, you know. Don't get excited. So there was nothing there but the hospital personnel, who were all enlisted men of various grades. So I got a hold of the top grade enlisted man, and I said, we're going to take Schultz with us. Please bring his personal belongings. And he said, I do not have authority to release him. And I said, I realize that. Bring me your logbook. This is an order. I'll make the proper entry in the logbook to relieve you of responsibility, which I did. So we piled Schultz in, take him down. Within 6 hours, he was on his way back to the United States in an air evac plane. At that time, the Mediterranean fleet was the big fleet over there, Admiral Hewitt. In a few days, I got a message from Admiral Hewitt telling me that his subject was the taking of the sailor without the permission of the British. The British always make a stink about these things. And that he was sending his senior medical officer, Rear Admiral so-and-so, to make investigation. So the admiral showed up as expected. And we went into a conference room. He had his briefcase full of papers. I don't know what was in there, but he had papers relating to us. And I said, Admiral, I want to make something clear. I gave the order to remove Schultz, but it was based on Dr. Anderson's medical opinion. So I can't justify what we did. That's Dr. Anderson's response to justify to you why it was necessary to move him. He says, I understand. So they talked and talked, medical dingo. And finally, without saying a word, the admiral stood up, put the papers in his briefcase, indicating he was leaving. And Dr. Anderson said, well, Admiral, did I do the right thing or the wrong thing? The admiral gave one of the screwiest answers I've ever heard in my life. I think he must have been a civilian, but in for the duration as the rear admiral. Now, here's what he said. If you had not done this, now there are a lot of negatives here. If you had not done this, and I had heard about it, you would have been in deep trouble. So he got up and left. Later on, through his buddies, we heard that Schultz had his part of his leg down, his ankle completely amputated. And that's the story about Gibraltar. One of the stories about Gibraltar.